Hey, did you know if you had a penicillin allergy and you eat enough mushrooms, it will activate your penicillin allergy and your throat will swell shut?
I mean, it makes sense. I think only an idiot wouldn't think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm a fucking idiot. Hi, welcome to Supernatural Selection. I'm your host, Kevin the Idiot.
I was joking.
I know.
It's just terrestrial death fungus.
Yes, yeah. It is. Not cosmic. Terrestrial.
Terrestrial illness fungus.
I guess I should have taken some essential oils. Anyway, I'm your host, Kevin. With me this week are Mike the Skeptic. Mike, how are you?
You need to do that cleanse thing where you like just shit yourself crazy for 5 days.
Yeah, like I said, essential oils and shit like that. Yeah. Yeah, I'll just follow the regimen.
The regimen.
You all right, Mike?
Yeah.
Okay. And we've got Mr. David Davis. David, how are you today?
I am not suffering from penicillin poisoning.
Good. Man, yeah. This is a tight-ass intro today.
Mm-hmm. Suffering from shitting yourself to death?
That might have been preferable to what happened the other night. So, just, if you have a penicillin allergy, don't eat a shit ton of mushrooms.
What about shrooms, like magic mushrooms?
I don't even want to try them anymore after that.
Well, there's ways to have the stuff without mushrooms.
The psilocybin? The
extract, yeah.
Yeah. Well, we're not going to talk about that. Not on air. Before we get started, housekeeping. Thank you, everyone, for listening, as usual. We have a new review to read on the air. I want to put out a call. If you would like to review our show, we will, again, read your reviews on the air. This was one that I somehow missed.
So it's not really a new review.
No, it was from 8 months ago, but still.
It's one
we didn't read.
It's new to us review.
It's not a bad one, so I didn't think to read it.
Yeah.
This is from Kickassatron. It says, fantastic. He gave us 5 stars. Fantastic podcast. The hosts research and scrutinize the weird, and they're not afraid to call out the racist crap that's embedded into too many supernatural theories.
Too many, like almost all of them.
Yeah. Pretty much.
Hey.
So, yeah, that, thank you for that, buddy. I appreciate it. And if you would like to hear your review read, you can rate us on iTunes or I guess you still do that on Spotify. I don't know. I'll have to check. I haven't been there in a while. Also, we're still accepting submissions for the zine. David, you want to tell them about that real quick?
Yeah, supernatpod.rocks/zines. We are taking illustrations and writing about cryptids of all sorts. So if you got that Bigfoot fan fiction, or you have that naughty Nessie fan art that you've done, send it our way. We will include it in the zine. I'm going to start doing a major push because starting next month, we are down to our last 2 months of the submission period. So
yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, if you've got anything worth sending, and I would say anything is worth sending. Even if you draw a stick figure, I love stick figures.
Yep. And also, you said Naughty Nessie, and I'm really hoping somebody tackles that and does art or a story of that. That would be great.
The deepest throat.
Yeah, oh my God. And lastly, we are still looking for advertisers. If you would like to advertise with us, the rates are reasonable. Use the contact form on the website. Should be supernatpod.rocks/contact, I think, or just head to supernatpod.rocks and click the form submission thing, which is under contact.
Yeah.
We can record the thing for you. We can write it if you give us the information. We'd be happy to help you advertise your independent project or Discordian Cabal or whatever you happen to be, plugging.
Mm-hmm.
So, all that out of the way, this is it, guys. This is the big one. This is a one that I didn't think needed to be done, and it turns out a lot of people these days don't know about it. We're doing Roswell.
Hmm.
So, like the whole town. Like, my jaw's going to get really tired.
Yeah, yeah. Hope you got your dental dam. So,
Mike, the deepest throat skeptic.
Yeah. God, the deepest skeptic. So, I've got some sources here to read off before we get going. First off, The Day After Roswell by William J. Burns and Philip J. Corso. Fuck that book. We'll go into why during the episode. Next, we have The Roswell Legacy by Jesse Marcel Jr. and Linda Marcel. That is the son of the gentleman from the famous weather balloon wreckage photo. So if you look up Jesse Marcel, that's his dad. Let's see. My other source is about 40 fucking years of reading, documentaries, TV specials, movies, etc. I cannot stress how long this has been a part of my life. I was maybe 8 or 9 the first time I heard about this thing. A few of the shows I can point out are Unsolved Mysteries, UFO Cover-Up Live, which you can find on YouTube, Sightings, the old Fox series that used to come on like right before The X-Files, and a Showtime TV movie called Roswell, not the teen drama.
Well, you can't forget Futurama either.
Yes, thank you, because they stole the title I wanted to use for this episode, which was Roswell That Ends Well, but, you know, the better show got it, so whatever. So, to start with, Mike...
Yeah.
I'd like you to explain to everyone what the average American knows about the Roswell incident. No pressure.
Aliens, yo. No, that's supposedly a UFO of some form crashed in Roswell, and the craft and alien remains were recovered by the U.S. government and are kept in some secret location with experiments, and that's where we get some of our technology from, and other crackpot theories arise.
Very good. Mm-hmm. Very good. Thank you, Mike. That's a very good summation of what your average person typically knows about Roswell.
Perfectly cromulent.
Yes, thank you. Ah, good. Simpsons reference. Glad we got that.
Fairly adequate.
Yes. Now, before we really get going, there's a few things I want to discuss about the Roswell incident in this episode. First, the crash happened at the perfect time. The actual...
420.
God damn it.
I was going to say the golden hour. That way they could get in on video.
Yep. The actual crash of whatever it was happened after the close of World War II and at the true dawn of the Cold War with the USSR. The country was already at the beginning of a heightened state of paranoia and distrust, and it also happened literally 2 weeks after Kenneth Arnold's sighting of flying discs over Mount Rainier, Washington.
Which we covered in an episode.
Yes, we did. Flying saucers, as they were just being dubbed, were in the news at the time. It was the beginning of the UFO craze and the modern UFO craze that we're still living with the fallout of.
And we've talked a lot about, like, history happening all at once, and here's another case of that.
Yeah, it's just interesting that all of it happened at once. And one of the things I need to... Well, you know what? I'll point it out when we get to it.
Okay.
Now, second, the renewed interest in Roswell happened at the perfect time. Jesse Marcel's revised story came out in 1978. We were post-Watergate, late Cold War, and post-Betty and Barney Hill abduction. The American public was primed to hear and take seriously the idea that the U.S. government not only had a UFO, but alien bodies, and were covering it up. Add the emergence of people like Bill Cooper and Art Bell into the mix, and you have the world we're in now.
And the thing about the Roswell incident as it happened, it was a fun novelty when it happened, but after a couple decades of the illusions being stripped from the perception of Americans that they're country was on the up and up, we were ready to start believing in the conspiracies.
Yeah, Mike?
Yeah, so, sort of. See, I've always obviously been a skeptic of the Roswell stuff, because right. It just seems like if there was such a thing to happen, that know, we have so many adversaries that it would hurt us and be in their interest for them to divulge the truth.
All right. Make us look like idiots.
Like in the height of the Cold War, you know, if Russia had come out and said, no, the American government's lying to you. There are UFOs. Here's the proof. Mm-hmm. That would have just been a, you know, global win for them.
Oh, they would have been smug for the rest of history. Yeah.
So I think, you know, a lot of conspiracy theories forget about that.
Yeah.
There's just so much capital to be gained from knocking us down at the time.
Right.
Well, but also, you know, you've got like people who like have that conspiracy that like Russian disinformation agents were trying to put out UFO stuff.
Yeah, or that, and there is a conspiracy we don't go into in the show really, but that the whole Roswell thing was a Russian op.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, no, and you'll get to tear this apart as we go, of course, okay. Mike. Yeah. Now, third.
If you leave anything for me.
I will, I think. Maybe. We'll see. Now, third, there are a lot of narratives about this, and not all of them are cohesive. In fact, a lot of them straight up contradict each other. And what I'm doing with this first half of the show is an amalgamation of the various stories, at least the ones that line up close enough that I could. I've left Philip J. Corso's account for a separate section. Now, fourth, the crash actually happened about 75 miles from Roswell, just outside of Corona, New Mexico, but Roswell Army Air Command handled the cleanup and took the call, so the name stuck.
So Corona is Spanish for crown, and this is the king of UFO stories. Coincidence? I think not.
Oh, wow. Nice.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that's what it meant, but I thought it was a beer.
The king of beers. Oh, no, yeah. that's Dos Equis, isn't it?
That Dos Equis is not the king of beers.
Okay.
Now, lastly, when I first learned about Roswell, it was literally 40 years ago, you know, 1987.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
47 to 87. Like, it was in people's living memory.
Yeah.
It hit me the other day that Roswell happened 77 years ago as of 2024.
Yep. Ooh.
We haven't just lost first-hand accounts. We've lost second-hand accounts. We've lost the people who originally brought us the fucking story. I felt like we needed to get this episode done while I'm still alive.
Well, so, just stay away from the mushrooms and you'll be living for a little bit longer.
Obviously, I feel like fate was trying to stop this one. So, Roswell's become a bit of a joke in more recent times, and with good reason. But I wanted to get down the story and the facts now, while folks are still here, like me, that at least remember having their world rocked by just the possibility that this might be true. So, let's begin, shall we?
Okie dokie. Let's go for it.
All right, so first off, let's take a minute to talk about Roswell itself, the actual town. Now, prior to the incident, Roswell was mostly known for being the headquarters of the 509th Bomb Group at Roswell Army Airfield. And this was the U.S.'s only nuclear bomber group at the time. So that's kind of a big deal. These are the guys that, you know, dropped the bombs.
Yeah.
So, after the airfield was renamed and decommissioned, Roswell pivoted to presenting itself as a retirement community. Now, more recently, it has, of course, leaned real damn hard into ufology, and people come from all over the world to see the site of what might be the first UFO crash and spend their hard-earned dollars at local businesses. Now, also, I didn't know that John Denver was from Roswell.
Oh, shit.
And so is Austin St. John, the first Power Ranger. So, you know, that's a thing. They have a shocking list of celebrities from Roswell.
Yeah, two of them.
Yeah. Well, no, there's way more than
that. Yeah, no,
but
no, it's cool.
Yeah. honestly, from everything I can tell, Roswell seems like a really swell place to visit. It looks beautiful, you know, despite being in New Mexico.
Apologies to any listeners from New Mexico, apparently.
Yeah, apologies from David, not me. No. Apparently, according to some folks, and I'm paraphrasing last podcast, it is an oasis in a sea of meth. So, again, apologies for borrowing that from Marcus Parks. So, now, let's get down to the story itself, as I understand it. Now, this is not covering absolutely every detail. We're part-time podcasters. So, going into that, if you would like to know the full story or details I have left out for brevity, please do your own research. So, around the weekend of July 4th, 1947, on a literal dark and stormy night, something crashed on a ranch outside of Corona, New Mexico. The next day, the ranch hand, one W.W. Mac Brazel, made his rounds to look for storm damage and check the condition of his flock. Now, while driving the flock to water, Mac came upon a debris field of some size. The sheep allegedly refused to cross, and he had to steer them around it. Now, Mac didn't immediately report this. The reason being, he lived 75 miles from the largest town where someone would give a shit, and he not only didn't have a phone, he didn't have electricity or running water. Now, at this point, it's necessary to point out that if there were alien bodies, Mac Brazel just left them out in the July sun of a New Mexico to marinate.
I was going to ask, wouldn't it be more like jerkying them?
You know, it's a very good point, because they'd have to sweat to marinate. All right, so a few days later, Mac makes his regular trip to Corona for supplies and to visit his uncle. He stopped in the bar, like you do, and while having a road soda, starts complaining. Beer. What's that?
Road beer.
Road beer, yes. And while having a road beer, starts complaining about the load of shit he found on the ranch, the sheep not wanting to cross it, and goddamn, he wishes he had some help cleaning it up. Now, this is my first personal theory of this episode. I think what happened next may have just been to get the U.S. Army to come and do Mac's work for him.
Goddamn aliens left their shit on my property.
You know, that needs to be in more movies. You know, my favorite part of Men in Black was when the Edgar's truck got blown up and he just walked out on the porch, sees the smoking hole and goes, figures.
Does this look like dead Martian storage to you? And why you treat it like one?
Oh, God, no. So one of Mac's companions at the bar mentions that it sounds like one of them there flying discs might have crashed, and that Mac should tell the sheriff. There might be a cash reward for it.
Cashforufos.com.
1-800-CASH-FOR-UFOs. So.
Cash for clunker UFOs.
Yeah. Yeah, they do a government trade-in.
Yep.
Oh, man. How much could you get for the Millennium Falcon? $500. So
I'd at least give $1,000.
Oh, yeah, definitely. So, on that July 5th, after at least one beer, Mac went and told Sheriff George Wilcox that a flying saucer had crashed on his ranch. Now, Wilcox's response was about what you'd expect. He believed Mac as much as you could believe a yokel after some beers running into your office yelling about flying saucers. So, after some convincing by Brazel and a sheriff's deputy, Wilcox called it into Roswell Army Airfield. Now, I need to throw in that while in town, Brazel also allegedly recorded an interview about this with the local radio station, which he didn't listen to. Again, no power. About finding the saucer. The interview allegedly mentions the bodies. The army would allegedly stop this interview from airing, threatening to revoke the station's broadcast license.
Allegedly is doing a lot of heavy lifting here.
Yes.
I honestly, one of the titles for this episode instead of Kevin Does Roswell was almost Allegedly Roswell.
Or I would have gone Roswell Allegedly.
Yes, either one would have worked, but so it's important that I bring up once again that this is the start of the Cold War. There was a very plausible possibility that something went down on that ranch and that something could have been Russian. Or it could have been American and highly sensitive in nature. And we will come back to that, right, Mike?
Yeah.
Yes. So, believing that something had actually crashed on the ranch, the Army sent Major Jesse Marcel and Captain Sheridan Cavett to head back out to the ranch with Brazel and figure out what the hell happened. Now, I don't have a lot of info on Captain Cavett. The reason being, he towed the party line on this one. He went out, did his job, and came back and was like, we picked up some crap. The end. In fact, he had to do a statement in the late 80s saying, it was a weather balloon, motherfucker. What? So just know that he was a good officer and a member of the Counterintelligence Corps along with Jesse Marcel. Now, Marcel was assigned to the 509th. He had actually been a coordinator of the atomic tests at Bikini Atoll, which is where we get SpongeBob. He was an intelligent man. He would also be the source of the germ of this whole goddamn story.
Well, we also can't forget he was also partially to blame for Godzilla's later attacks on Tokyo.
Shit. You're right.
Yeah.
Fuck. Damn, Jess. Anyway, they arrived back at the ranch late in the day and had to spend the night in his and his wife's tiny little house. Imagine for a second spending the night in a small shanty on a ranch. It's dark. There's no power. You're eating cold beans from a can. And the only sound is the surrounding nothingness and the occasional sheep being surprised by grass. Maybe you hear a coyote.
They had to have at least had like a wood-burning stove. They're not Rorschach from Watchmen.
This is true, but...
Maybe a little banjo in the distance.
But I... I actually know that they were cold. He served them cold fucking beans, the rude motherfucker.
Couldn't even put a candle under him?
I swear to God, man, chafing it's not dish. That hard. Something.
He could have sat on the can for a little bit.
That's what I was going to say. He could have stuck the can under his armpit and walked around.
Yeah, something. He could have hotboxed him.
Oh, my God. He might have hotboxed the house, but still. This is like a two-room shanty. So, the next morning, Brazel takes the two men out to the debris field. Marcel and Cavett both remark on the size of the thing, and they start loading bits into boxes to take back to the base for examination. Now, in this version of the story, each man brought a vehicle, and this is going to come into play in just a minute, but it's worth noting.
We really hadn't begun pushing carpools as a society at this point.
No. No, everybody's like, feels it's their personal mandate to burn as much goddamn gasoline and oil as they possibly can.
Well, I mean, shit, you gotta get the lead in the atmosphere somehow.
I'm gonna destroy so many dinosaur skeletons.
It's like every problem at the time could be solved by pouring gasoline or diesel on it and setting it on fire.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you have ants, pour some gasoline or diesel on it.
Get some communists.
Yeah, pour some gasoline or diesel on them. Going bald, pour some gasoline on it. It'll probably do something.
Well, you know who carpools, right?
Communists.
Commies, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was the American way. Everybody, even the kid drove a car.
Yeah. A five-year-old behind the wheel of a Volkswagen. That
family dog had his own car to get to and from the veterinarian.
That's right. So, after loading up the boxes...
I just realized someone that didn't have their own car.
Who?
The mother of the house.
Oh, of course. She didn't have rights. What are you talking about?
Well, no, she was able to borrow the car for the Tupperware parties.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sure. Yeah, right. I forgot about the Tupperware parties. I brought a casserole. So, after
I brought a casserole.
We all brought a casserole. Both men made the long trek back to Roswell with boxes of debris. Now, Cavett would apparently take his back to the base. Marcel? Not so much.
What?
Yeah. It seems Marcel knew there was something strange and unearthly about the material he had handled.
The real giveaway is it screamed when he touched it.
I was going to say, he's seen some pixels before.
You just pick up a spring and it starts writhing in agony.
Why is this made of meat? So, anyway, he'd state eventually that some of it was an extremely lightweight metal in the shape of tiny I-beams with strange purple writing engraved on them.
Elvish runes.
Yes. Other pieces are what are called memory metal by believers. It was a kind of foil material, maybe you guys have heard about this from various things, mm-hmm. that when crumpled up, it would unfold back into its original shape.
Yeah, when you say that, I have a mental image of a very poorly done 1980s stop motion animation on one of these like
that
documentary show.
That was actually a fucking Unsolved Mysteries. I know the shot you're talking about, because yeah, I remember seeing it and going, well, that's cheap as shit.
Yeah.
Now, apparently larger pieces of the memory metal could be struck with a sledgehammer and remain completely undamaged.
Hmm.
Now, there were also brown materials that Jesse Marcel Jr., his son, would refer to as Bakelite, which is an early form of plastic.
It's a phenolic resin.
Yeah. David, you ever heard of this shit?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, have you seen old 1950s radios made of plastic-looking stuff in telephones?
Usually very dark brown, reddish brown or black.
That's
like Fallout.
Yep.
Yeah. I actually had a radio with that because my parents were old. Now,
how old were
they?
They had Bakelite radios.
I was highly unexpected. We'll just say that. The last material was some form of strange wires. He said they weren't cord or string, but described them as what we'd call fiber optics today.
Wizard rope. Got it.
So, what did Marcel do with this material? He took it home to show his family.
Hey, kids, come look at what Daddy done brought you.
Mike, how does that sit with you? Well, maybe this'll evoke something. He comes in at 3 in the morning with a cardboard box full of possibly irradiated crap, dumps it on the kitchen floor, then wakes up his family and tells them to play with it.
Yeah, that's the worst Christmas ever.
Dad, I got school tomorrow.
It's irradiated Christmas in July.
I must be imagining dragons because it's radioactive.
I don't need to tell you how dangerous this is, and also probably highly illegal. So,
well, I mean, come on, Kevin, it's America. There's nothing illegal about a man endangering his family.
Okay, that's true. Yeah, he made
not 1940s.
Yeah, I mean
1950s.
I mean, a few years earlier, someone was using a pistol as a pacifier. So
yeah, people were still smoking indoors in the living room.
Smoking directly in their children's faces.
Yeah. Every night they'd go over the crib of the infant and just kind of blow a couple puffs to toughen them up.
There you go. That'll make you able to fight the communists.
Taking a Marlboro country.
You have such a nice voice, Dad. I'm your mother. So, your mother sounds like Dr. Girlfriend. Anyway, so Jesse Marcel Jr. would say that his father had a Geiger counter and showed them it was safe, but I'll believe that when you show me film footage of it fucking happening. So, after possibly irradiating his family, Marcel boxed the stuff back up, sticks it in the trunk, and then heads back to the base with it.
So where's the idea that it's irradiated come from?
It's just, that's kind of, you know, something I threw in there, but like other people were like, so you just threw stuff at your kid without checking.
I'd be more worried about like other toxic, like byproducts. Like radiation would be low on my list. If I found a bunch of random scrap.
But you didn't live in the atomic age like they did.
Oh, well, yeah, yeah, but still. Yeah. Unless it's actual radioactive material, like if it's just like metals and stuff, it's, you know, it.
So,
an atomic explosion went off nearby or it came from like a reactor or something, I would be more worried about stuff like, you know, cadmium, lead,
right. Space AIDS.
I mean, yeah. I could put this into context. He owned a fucking Geiger counter. So radiation was definitely something on his mind.
In all fairness, he was part of the nuclear program.
Right. Yeah, yeah, but those are like standard issue too, right?
Probably.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm just saying that there's plenty of other things. I think radioactivity is being a little too narrow focused on what could have been the dangers.
Yeah, I don't think
exotic materials.
Yeah, I don't think anybody thought about, again, space AIDS.
Yeah, I'm sure they washed their hands.
Oh, that's safe.
Yeah, yeah. Well, my whole thing is, you got to wonder if anyone asked why he was late. Like, did he say he dropped by his place with secret government metal and folks were like, oh, sure, that's perfectly normal protocol.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, man. That's just a crazy thing he did. You know, it's like, hey, I'm sure it's safe. Come on, kid. Why don't you lick it?
He always takes back one of our projects for a little work at home, consults with his kids and his wife.
Oh, yeah. He just really had to take a shit, so he took it.
You know,
he went home.
I believe that before the other.
Yes.
Can you imagine yourself as a kid, all right? You're a kid, you're sleeping in bed, and your dad wakes you up and say, hey, look at this shit I found.
Now,
you're gonna be like, okay, I'm going back to sleep.
Yeah. Now, I do want to throw out there that Jesse Marcel Jr. talks about the strange property of these things, but he never crumpled up the metal to see if it was memory metal.
It wasn't strong enough.
He's going by his dad and other reports. So, after this, a team was dispatched from Roswell to the ranch to collect the debris. And it's at this point we get to the bodies. In some reports, while collecting the wreckage of the downed craft, the military found bodies scattered not far from it, like maybe they got sucked out a rent in the side. At least 4 and up to 6. They also found one living creature that was heavily wounded. The description of them is short, with giant heads, giant almond-shaped eyes tilted down toward the nose, a tiny slit for a mouth, and just a bump for the nose with holes on the side of the head for ears. And no hair per se, but a bit of peach fuzz covering their bodies.
So you're telling me the survivor would later go on to play Caillou on PBS?
That or Charlie Brown.
Wah, wah, wah.
Wah, 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 wah. So, the skin, guess what color it was?
Green.
Mike?
Pale gray.
Pinkish brown.
That? See, a pig?
Yeah. Yeah, like a pig. And it was an odd texture. Almost scales, but definitely skin. They also had 6 fingers with no thumbs. This might sound familiar to some of you listening from the All Them Aliens episode. Mm. The fingers seemed to be covered in tiny suction cups. And they wore little blue jumpsuits.
They were just little engineers.
You know, actually, I think you may be onto something there, David, because they didn't know, the survivor didn't know shit about shit, so.
He was very specially educated in STEM, so.
Yeah.
They wore little blue jumpsuits with yellow or gold trim. They're vault dwellers.
Oh, God, that's what it is. They're from the future where they're all irradiated.
Yeah, Vault 93, surgically altering vault dwellers to look like aliens.
Yep. Boy, can't wait for season 2. So everyone who looked into the eyes of this survivor could feel that it was frightened, in pain, and knew that it was going to die. And I don't mean like the look on its face. I mean it was using what they keep referring to as thought transference. And I'm like, it's psychic powers, guys. Come on.
Can you imagine walking up to this, like, near corpse of this weird little bald thing, and you start hearing screaming in your head.
Yeah, actually, that would be horrifying.
Jesus.
This is a part where, it, like, as a kid, I was just like, holy shit. Now, there's also a version of this story that one alien was found alive and running away. And the MP shot him in the back as he ran.
Well, obviously he's a communist.
I was going to say, not the first time a scared fleeing person of color was shot in the back in New Mexico.
Oh, damn, son. They shot him in the fucking head. So, all of this was loaded onto flatbeds into military trucks and hauled back to Roswell Army Air Base.
Okay, but did they, like, just take the survivor and toss them in the back, or did they get to ride up front in the cab?
What they did, I'm glad you asked, was they strapped him to a gurney and shoved him in the back of one of the trucks with a bunch of wreckage.
Jesus Christ. They come back and he's just a pincushion with all these shards of metal because they hit a few bumps. Yeah.
They look at him and just in your head you hear, fucking why? So, anyway, Brazel was interrogated after this for 2 days straight and told to keep his fucking mouth shut. The Army bought him a brand new pickup truck as hush money. Now, that last bit about Brazel being told to keep quiet is odd. Because on July 8th, William Haught, the public information officer, released a statement to the press that the Army had in fact retrieved a crash flying disc and that it was being studied at Wright Airfield in Ohio. This would be the last the wreckage would be reliably seen.
So you're telling me that the right hand sometimes does not know what the left hand is doing in a government operation? I find that impossible.
How about you, Mike? Is that plausible?
I don't know. I mean...
So, also, I'm going to include a link here in the document, and I hope y'all get, like Mike, you can go back and listen to this later. It's a link to the original audio of the ABC News radio broadcast of the recovery of the disc, the press release. And it's just really fucking wild to hear old-timey radio talk about this shit, so check the link in this week's doc.
And yet no message to drink our Ovaltine in the whole clip.
You know, I'm a little surprised. This important, world-changing thing is brought to you by Marlboro. So... very quickly, the UFO story was retracted.
Oh, no.
And
say it ain't so.
I know. And the press was invited out to Roswell to see the wreckage and take photos. And this is where the weather balloon cover story originated. Photos were taken of Jesse Marcel holding up suspiciously clean pieces of weather balloon wreckage, with a look on his face that just screams, "You have got to be shitting me, Pyle!" I seriously, and this is not saying it's a UFO, but I seriously don't think that that was the material Marcel brought in. And I seriously believe that he knew it wasn't, and I seriously think he was doing what the general told him to do, and he fucking hated it.
Well, it is one hell of an iconic photo, that's for sure.
It is. But we'll get into why it was not that, not the original wreckage.
I don't know. I mean, I'm looking at the picture now. He doesn't look that incredulous. He just looks like he's looking up at somebody.
Yeah, I know. But all the other photos, he's kind of got this seriously.
I've only ever seen this photo, so.
There's like three or four.
No, but you should have shared those too.
Well, I only had the one I photoshopped a word balloon in, so. So there are also versions of this story where the bodies were recovered from a second crash site near Aztec, New Mexico, that was discovered by a Boy Scout troop that was shot in the back of the fucking head for their trouble.
They shot the kids?
They shot the fucking kids.
This just seems like, you know, not sensationalism, but just like, you know, making shit up just to make it sound even more bad.
Yeah, whoever's writing this sitting there going, "I told mom I was hardcore."
Yeah.
Like if you were a Boy Scout, would you rather get shot in the back of the head or molested by a scout leader?
Oh, shot in the back of the head any day.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah.
So, the story...
depends on how much you like the scout leader, I guess.
Not that much. So, The story of the bodies.
Jesus Christ, I thought I had the darkest joke here.
Nope. Nope.
I mean, sometimes it's like I'd rather just live. I mean,
I don't know, man. It's like, would you rather be an altar boy or anyway? So the story of the bodies comes in from eyewitness, quote unquote, interviews of people that saw them brought in, a nurse describing the bodies during the autopsies, and the local funeral home getting a call for a bunch of child coffins, which the mortician was like, what the fuck happened out there that a bunch of kids died?
A really great joke setup, apparently.
I mean, it's the early 50s. I mean, I'm sure there was plenty of times when a bunch of kids died.
Yeah, like when they shot that Boy Scout troop.
Or polio.
Now, all of these have one thing in common.
Polio?
No, they all come from Bill Moore, who we will come back to later.
God, though, could you imagine the dark comedy movie about a group of kids who they find a surviving alien, hang out with him, and try to protect him? It's like E.T., and then they get murdered at the end. You know, just attach Bobcat Goldthwait as director, and you've got a hit.
I was going to say, it sounds like the alternate ending to E.T.
I was going to say, isn't this, what was the name of that?
Super 8?
No, God, that terrible alien movie with the kid in the wheelchair.
Mac and me.
This is Mac and Me.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah, because that kid gets shot. That's right.
That's right.
Oh, my fucking
God.
One
of the most weirdly out-of-pocket scenes in the entire movie where they have a dance party at McDonald's, but the kid getting shot is what really stands out.
God, it's like fucking Petey Wheatstraw, the devil's son-in-law.
Wasn't there also an alternate ending where, like, the kid, like, flew off of a cliff or something?
No, that happened.
Oh, that happened.
Yeah, he rolled down a cliff into the water because Paul Rudd shows it every goddamn time he sees Conan O'Brien. He never brings a clip of his movie. It's always that scene from Mac and Me. Okay, now, as for the aftermath of the... Now, Paul Rudd, that's a hell of a thing to enter into this. Now, as for the aftermath of the Roswell incident, the theories say that every technological advancement since 1947 has been from reverse-engineered technology from the covered craft or crafts.
Because we're just a bunch of dumbasses. We can't come up with our own stuff.
That's right.
Just fucking idiots. We're idiots.
Big, dumb, stupid doo-doo heads.
We come up with the atomic bomb on our own, but after that, nope. We can't make strands of glass that we shoot light down.
Nope.
I mean, you have to admit it's pretty refreshing. This time it's the white people who can't seem to do shit and aliens did the work.
That's true.
Yeah, like after years of doing the show, it's like surely nobody from this country can stack rocks into a pyramid. It must have been aliens.
Yeah. Okay, that's fair. At least this time it's us.
Sure.
Yeah.
Surely no one from this country can make sand do math.
So here's the thing. The one survivor of the crash, before dying, managed to contact home in some versions of this. And this led to the meeting with Eisenhower that led to the Gaeta Treaty and directly led to alien abductions and the hybrid program. So...
Okay. That's what I think of that.
Wow. I don't know whether that's getting cut or not.
No, keep it in.
That's my commentary on the Gaeta Treaty.
Fair. Keep it in, coward.
Yeah. All right. Well, shit, I guess I have to. So after the weather balloon story, everyone had a good laugh about this, and then the story literally just fucking died until 1978 and Stanton Friedman.
Oh, Stanton.
Oh, Zach, that guy?
The egg-shaped man that's been on, like, every goddamn documentary until he died?
Dr. Robotnik?
Yes.
Or is he, like, the reverse Dr. Robotnik?
Yeah, he's, like, good Dr. Robotnik.
Well, I mean, doesn't he have, like, a beard but no mustache?
No, he's got a beard and a mustache, but he's got jowls.
In my head, I can see him in my head, and he, for some reason, he...
he's got a very specific voice that he talks... And he's very condescending towards skeptics.
How iconic is this man that even me, as the skeptic, knows who the fuck he is?
You know of Stanton Friedman. I know of his collection of suspenders.
No, I know of two alien conspiracy people. It's this guy, Friedman, and the hair guy.
Like J. Allen Hynek?
No, the newer aliens guy. Sucralose, yeah.
Sucralose. Yeah. Not Sucralose. Sucralose. That's a sweetener.
You know, if we ever write a book after Stanton Friedman, we're just going to put suspender enthusiast each time.
Yes, no. That is exactly what we're going to do.
Should do a compilation of a ufology people and call it From Eggman to Hair Guy.
Oh, God. So, anyway, now that we've more or less got the story down out of the way, we're finally going to take a break. And when we come back, we'll talk about what probably really happened and the origins of the fucked up story I just told you and why it's still important to talk about. So, we'll be right back.
Hey there, if you're listening to this podcast right now, you're probably into cryptids and monsters. Well, if you have a creative spark, you can always join us in our first ever Supernatural Selection zine project. For 2024, we are doing cryptid encounters, where you can draw or write a encounter with a cryptid of your choice, and we'll put it in the zine. The current submission window is from early January to late June. If you're interested in finding out more, you can always go to supernaturalselectionpod.com/zines. That is Z-I-N-E-S. Now back to the show.
Hi everyone, this is Kevin from Supernatural Selection. Are you an independent creator? Do you have a webcomic or an Etsy store? Do you 3D print things? Or are you just looking to get some word out for your Discordian cabal with social terrorism? Well, we'd love to help. And David, I believe you've got some details about how we can help.
Why, certainly. If you go to supernaturalselectionpod.com/contact, that is supernaturalselectionpod.com/contact, you can learn how to advertise with us.
That's right. I believe the rate is $2 per episode. You can't beat that with a stick.
Yeah, I mean, trust me, we've tried.
Yeah, that's cheap. That's literally cheaper than dirt.
Mm-hmm. And best of all, if you're not sure how to write an ad, we'll do it for you. We'll even record it.
Absolutely. Just let us know what you need in the ad, and we'll be happy to do that for you.
And again, that URL is supernaturalselectionpod.com/contact.
And now, back to the show. And we're back after I nearly choked to death on a Coca-Cola. So, what do you guys think so far? UFO, weather balloons, secret Russian birthday technology?
Well, obviously it's a false flag operation conducted by the deep state to push the idea of weather balloons to monitor climate change and infringe on our rights as God-fearing Americans.
No. And gay frogs.
Now what I'm going to need you to do is I need you to look up on YouTube gay weather balloon frogs and, sorry.
Oh, Alex Jones.
Yeah.
I wonder if he's ever had thoughts on the Roswell incident.
Oh, I'm sure, but I'm not going through it. I'm not looking through that shit to find it.
If we knew the Knowledge Fight guys, we could ask them.
Oh, I wish. So, Mike, how about you? What do you think? Weather balloon, UFO, secret military
I don't
thing
think
from
it's,
Russia?
I don't think it was a weather balloon. I think it was some form of spy balloon, uh-huh. Maybe even a prototype spy balloon that,
okay.
You know, crashed. And I think the whole cover-up and secrecy was because it was, you know, something that they were trying to keep secret. It was something they were trying to keep secret.
Yes.
It just wasn't.
But it wasn't a UFO.
Wasn't a UFO.
The good news is, this next section called What Really Happened, we're going to get right into it now.
Okay.
So, the first thing we need to discuss is Project Mogul. Project Mogul was a highly classified project the Army ran from 1947 till 1949 and involved high-altitude balloons of immense size clustered together, outfitted with high-powered microphones and other equipment, including radar reflector kits. Now, the purpose was to detect the sound waves and atmospheric distortions of possible nuclear detonations in the USSR. This was an attempt to find out if the commies had the bomb. So, the materials of a Project Mogul balloon consisted of the giant balloons. Various materials were experimented with. Balsa wood sticks in the shape of I-beams with purple writing on them. A foil material backed with paper that was used to reflect radar. And the electronic equipment sometimes was housed in a Bakelite box, but often in a cardboard box. Now, the material used was a wire that probably wasn't known well to kids in 1947. Now, you'll notice that every single thing I mentioned is analogous to something Marcel Sr. and Jr. both mentioned in the descriptions of the materials that were recovered. I'm just saying that seeing something kind of weird when you're 10 has a way of distorting when you're like 60 and your dad's been telling you it's aliens since 1978.
Like, once you get into the alien technology truther lifestyle, it can be hard to see it as anything else, I guess.
That's very true.
Yeah.
And Project Mogul was not actually declassified in any capacity until 1994, when the government started to actually debunk the Roswell story. And I think that was a bit too late to stop the train.
Well, yeah.
Like, if you had done it in 1979 or 80, maybe. It's like letting a small infection on your big toe go until eventually they have to cut off your right fucking leg.
Well, yeah. It's like trying... you go ahead, Mike.
I was going to say, but I think the Roswell conspiracy also helped in some ways, because if people are looking for aliens, they're not looking for other things.
They're not looking for Project Mogul, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think the not debunking it earlier was more or less intentional.
No, I understand that. I just, it's a hell of a gap to let it fester.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's like trying to cut off one's nose to spite their face, or more accurately, reveal covert U.S. detection ops to spite conspiracies you actively propagated.
That's true. Now, Project Mogul has been the official explanation of the Roswell crash since the Air Force released Roswell, case closed, as their final word on the subject in 1994.
Nice try, guys. Nice try.
Yep. Good attempt. So, let's talk about the origins of the story. First off, I need to apologize to you, Mike, right now.
Yeah.
Because the rest of this episode is explaining where each element of the story came from, and I feel like I'm doing your job.
Well, I'll just, like, take a nap.
I want you to throw in. I want you to jump in here anytime you have a thought or an alternate theory or additions, please.
All right,
an important part of the show.
I will, I will give my thoughts. Okay,
good. All right, so the story starts with Stanton Friedman.
Suspenders enthusiast.
Suspenders of the gods. So... Stanton was a well-respected nuclear physicist that had worked all over the public and private sector in a very successful career up until the 70s, when he caught the worst disease you can catch as a scientist.
Syphilis?
Ufology.
Oh, damn it.
I heard they make a cream for that.
Do they? They make a cream for ufology?
It's probably like Bengay or something.
Nonetheless, he became
a... Blue Star ointment.
Yeah, something. He became obsessed with UFOs, and he quit his job and began working in ufology full time.
I mean, if it can pay the bills.
Yeah. Well, also, he'd made, like, nuclear physics money. And I'm not going to lie.
He said he quit his day job, though, so
yeah.
Maybe he saved.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He must have saved up a good bit. And I'm not going to lie. I'm jealous as fuck.
Well, who is?
It was during a conference around this time that he was made aware of and put in contact with the retired Jesse Marcel.
You know, in another life, I'd like to think the three of us would live in an RV creating pirate radio conspiracy content, as we crisscross the country. What I'm saying is that it's not too late.
Yeah, David, I hate to tell you this. You just explained our retirement plan.
We'll sell ice cream and comic books out of the RV as well.
And peddle conspiracy theories at the children. So,
and play punk music.
Yeah.
We'll be the raddest people in any town at any given moment.
And run out of town as soon as they see us near the children. So
they're going for the children.
They're coming right for us. So Marcel said that he needed to come clean about Roswell. He'd been supporting the official weather balloon story for decades, and he needed to get the truth out there that the materials he'd handled at Roswell were not of earthly origin.
Ooh.
Ooh. Now, I already described the material he'd found that day on the ranch, but I need to point out that at no point in his life did he ever claim to see, handle, or hear about alien bodies. His son would talk about alien bodies, saying that high-placed government officials...
Men in high place, top men.
Top men. Told him there were bodies. But that was after the death of his father, and he had his own career to think about.
Kevin, I have a question.
Yeah?
Did the bodies, in fact, hit the floor?
Oh, they hit so hard, Mike.
Okay, good. Let the bodies hit the floor.
Let the bodies hit the... Yeah.
See, I really don't get the lack of compartmentalization there.
Yeah.
If the guy only saw wreckage and no bodies, he didn't need to know that the bodies were present, kind of an above his pay grade situation. So
he wasn't paid at all. So
in creating another vector for a leak, you know what I mean?
Actually, I looked it up, and he did have a pay grade. I just don't remember what it was. It's like a 4 or something like that. I don't know. I don't know how the pay grade actually works. But
I was talking about the son.
Oh, the son? Yeah, no. Actually, we'll get into what he did for a living. And okay. Yes, it was military.
Well, I mean, at the time, he didn't have a pay
grade. No, he is a child.
But why do they need to tell him this if he only saw, like, the materials?
Yeah, why spread out more information to someone that doesn't need to know?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's not a need-to-know basis.
Yeah. Now, Friedman also was privy to the Majestic 12 papers.
Oh, no.
That were allegedly leaked minutes of meetings and details of a vast government conspiracy run by a 12-man council that was responsible for all our interactions with aliens, obtaining their technology, and overseeing the abduction program.
I hear he also dropped his pants in front of JFK, and he wiped mud off of his face, and it was in the shape of a smiley face.
You son of a bitch.
And Orville Redenbacher was there in the Council of 12.
Actually, I'd
buy
that.
Before he died in that hot tub.
Yep. Now, you ever watch the X-Files?
No. I never watched the X-Files.
Yeah, right. So, you know the group the Smoking Man worked for? That's where the idea for that group came from, is Majestic 12.
I always assumed he was a very pushy marketer for Morley cigarettes.
Okay, that's fair. I can see that. You know, those were actually non-tobacco cigarettes because the guy that played the Smoking Man refused to smoke.
You know, that's nice that they did that for him.
Yeah, they were herbal.
I couldn't tell.
Yeah.
Maybe there were cloves.
Oh, God. Maybe there were weed.
a jazz cigarette.
Yeah.
Instead of the Majestic 12, was it like the not quite good looking 13?
Were the questionable 3. Anyway, Friedman was like Ghostbusters. We're ready to believe you.
Stanton's Crazy Bullshit Emporium is open for business. Cash value for conspiracies.
Again, 1-800 cash for conspiracies. So
also suspenders.
Yep. Goddamn, trade you suspenders for conspiracy. Anyway, now this leads me to my first talking point. What happened in 1978 that led Jesse Marcel to start claiming it was an alien craft? Was it trying to secure a spot on the growing field of speaking at UFO conferences? Was he being used as a disinformation agent? That's an idea I want to come back to in a bit. I just find it interesting that this whole thing was dead and buried for 30 years, and then he digs it back up. What do you guys think?
He had some gambling debts he needed to I guess.
That's just a guess. I unironically blame the success of Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Really? UFO stuff. Well, I mean, UFO stuff was still arguably pretty niche until that movie, because it's a big blockbuster movie about encounters, right?
Right.
Suddenly, now there's this multi-million dollar market for UFO stories because, oh, wait, my story can make a movie.
Like, okay, I understand that, but, like, I don't remember there being a lot of sightings of the Ark of the Covenant in the sky after Raiders.
Well, no, but the other thing is, like, if you... Steven Spielberg was also kind of like a UFO nerd.
Oh, he's got a new UFO movie coming out soon.
It took a UFO nerd to make the UFO blockbuster.
Oh, yeah.
And you know, because of the success of Jaws and everything like that. So, yeah. Again, like, I mean, until Close Encounters of the Third Kind, I would still say that a lot of that UFO story stuff was still a very niche kind of limited among weirdos like us. Like,
right.
Like us in the early 70s, we would have known about this shit. Not so much.
People that got pantsed a lot in school.
We'd be living in basements full of black mold in the 70s, all right?
Wear a Halloween mask to school every day, and it'd be very weird.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, it would.
It would.
So, the bodies. Remember the bodies?
That hit the floor?
That hit the floor. So, the bodies recovered at Roswell have their own origins with the book The Roswell Incident by Charles Berlitz and Bill Moore. You may remember I mentioned him earlier.
Mm-hmm.
The book was released in 1980, 2 years after Marcel's revised story, and you could consider this the AD&D of the Roswell story. It took the lore Marcel started and sort of expanded on it.
It even brought Gary Gygax on board to write the source books.
You know, I could see that, the dice rolling son of a bitch.
It's a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah. This is the best joke.
Put them away or I'll take them away.
Yeah. So, in the book, these guys cited 90 witnesses to Roswell. In the book, they only quoted 25. And out of those, only 7 actually had firsthand accounts.
Mm.
And 2 of those were of the bodies or knowledge of the bodies.
Hey, man, sources are sources. What can I tell you?
Sure, I guess. I mean, that's like our level of research, I guess. Now, a little bit of digging shows that the witnesses either didn't exist or the reports were false. Like, they weren't anywhere near where they said they were at the time they said they were there.
Are you saying people just make up shit?
Yeah, I kind of am. Huh. So, Glenn Dennis in particular, who was the mortician I mentioned earlier, he gave testimony of his own about 2 witnesses to the bodies after the 2 gentlemen had died. And Stanton Friedman just sort of bought into it.
No, Stanton Friedman wouldn't do that.
I wish. Now, this book...
Did those 2 men die together?
Embraced.
Were they in a car accident together? What's going on here?
No, they died of old age. I know you've got this weird head cannon. Huh?
At the same time?
No.
So it was like,
the guy waited until these 2 people were dead so he could tell lies.
Okay, because I was just wondering if it's like he bumped them off or something.
They died in an embrace in a KFC.
No, it could be an embrace in like a volcanic eruption.
Yeah, no, it's like Joe versus a volcano.
Pompeii.
Yeah, one of those New Mexico volcanoes.
Yep, mm-hmm, tons of them. Right. Now, this book is sensationalist trash.
Hearing you say
endless
that.
Trash.
That's a very nice Red Letter Media reference you got there, Mike.
Yes.
So, the authors of this book wrote multiple books on the strange and the paranormal, like the Philadelphia Experiment and the Bermuda Triangle, 2 notorious pieces of bullshit.
Mm.
It was a cash grab, and it got taken entirely too seriously.
Mm.
So, what about the multiple craft? Because that night, anywhere between 1 and 9 UFOs went down in the New Mexico desert in that lightning storm.
They're dropping like fucking flies.
Yeah, there are actually theories that our radar technology fucked up their navigations and made them crash. But I'm like,
I was going to ask if there was a Star War going on or something.
Apparently. Well, prior to and after Roswell, there were hoax crashes. Not like this, which is, you know, misinformation, rumor, blah, blah, blah. These were hoaxes. When I say hoaxes, I mean hoax, like intentionally fraudulent.
Mm.
There was a fake account of a crash in Aztec, New Mexico, where small gray aliens were recovered that would get mixed in with Roswell later. My favorite, though, is the earlier Twin Falls, Idaho crash. There was wreckage of a spaceship found by teens and reported to the authorities. It turned out that it was a smashed-up jukebox that had the bits thrown into a field.
You know, easy to miss. Easy to miss. Categorize.
It got stuck playing a loop of What's New Pussycat.
Yeah, no. God
damn it.
Town
just got fed up.
What happened is they went out and it's like, these aliens were listening to Mr. Sandman. No,
You were listening to Purple People Eater, which seems pretty on the nose.
But yeah, that's where the multiple crashes get confused into this.
Well, I mean, we've seen this in other situations we've covered on the show. Like, during this period of time, that kind of sightings boom of the 50s through 70s, there are a lot of these regional flaps, and inevitably, they get locked up into one or two big flaps, right?
Mm-hmm.
The stories just kind of get drawn together, and you get that narrative where, like, one sighting ends up being 13 variations on one event, but there are 13 different things.
Yeah, yeah.
Big meat flaps.
Big meat flaps. Jesus Christ. Damn it. Now I want roast beef. Anyway.
Mike, I love your contributions.
Okay, now, I want to take a minute and talk about some of the individuals in this story responsible for spreading it and growing it over the years. And the possibility that they were being employed or manipulated by the government for various purposes.
Hmm.
All right. And we're going to start with Philip J. fucking Corso.
No, I thought you were going to say Fry for a second there.
Yeah, you know, I wonder about that.
He did do the nasty and the pasty.
He did. So, for this episode, I found a hardback copy of a book called The Day After Roswell in a used bookstore in Tennessee. This book is an account by retired Lieutenant Colonel Philip J. Corso and was probably written mostly by the co-author William J. Burns. It was released in 1997, and the book tells a very different account of the Roswell crash. That includes the local fire department finding the crash site and the military being on site immediately off the bat. Mac Brazel plays no role in the story. And Corso,
he's made up.
What?
I don't know. It just sounds like a made up name.
And
yeah, what is he? A candy and a gum?
Yeah. He's from Brazil. No. But he plays no role in the story, and Corso casts himself as the unlikely hero dealing with the materials after recovery and actually seeing a body in transport to Wright Field.
I call it a Hawking hole.
God damn it.
No, but yeah, I'm also starting to suspect that people with the middle initial of J might be feds.
That's a good guess. But, I mean, like, the story about him finding the body, he claims he found it in a warehouse and ripped the crate open, and there was a glass coffin full of blue goo with an alien in it. And I'm like, are you telling me they had him floating like a comb?
I opened the closet, and there were two aliens, and they were making a baby, and the baby winked at me.
You know what? I think this episode may have more Matt Groening references than any other episode we've done.
There's a Simpsons or Futurama reference for everything we do.
I swear. So, the problem with this book is even according to the accepted bizarre facts of the Roswell conspiracy, Corso's story doesn't even hold water to that.
It's full of holes, see?
Yeah, he has dates wrong. He has locations wrong. He says it actually crashed at Roswell. He spins stories in this that make no sense. Now, the best part for me is that the book has a foreword by Senator Strom fucking Thurmond.
That was buck wild when you showed me that.
Yes, the man who filibustered the Civil Rights Act. The most racist man who has ever been in Congress and was there for most of his 90-something years of life.
He was very racist, yes. Yeah. But I think there were more racist people in Congress.
Sure, but man, does he stand out.
There might be more racist people today. They're just good at hiding it.
No.
Kinda.
No, so, I would say, I'm blanking on names now, but there were some very, very fucking racist people.
Now, the reason I find this hilarious is because he wrote the foreword under the false pretense that Corso's book was about how we were justified in our actions in Vietnam and Corso's role in that. When he found out that the book was about UFOs, he came out of the corner swinging about how he never would have done it if he'd known it was about UFOs, and he sued the publisher and author for lying to him and has had the foreword removed from future editions. Mine is a first edition.
Well, Kevin, thank you for preserving the words of Strom Thurmond through your collecting.
Yeah, I know. I feel kind of weird about that, but
what does that tell you about how Strom Thurmond, treated like writing a foreword to a fucking book? Like, didn't even fucking read it.
Didn't even read it or ask. Now, that being said, the book does a lot of jingoistic saber rattling about how Vietnam was undermined by the liberals in government and how they were tools of the Soviets and how we have been infiltrated deep in the government by liberal communists. I'm not going to bring up our current political climate.
The fact that a book about Roswell spends a lot of time justifying crimes in Vietnam is a very, sir, this is a Wendy's moment in UFO literature.
It really is. Like, it started going there. I'm like, what the fuck am I reading? I mean, it involves, a mysterious filing cabinet. It's so fucking dumb. Like, they literally keep the remnants of a UFO in an unlocked filing cabinet that gets ferried from room to room on a dolly.
There's so little of it. It's like just a filing cabinet's worth.
Yeah. Wow. I don't know what the fuck. Anyway, the theory is that Corso put the book out at that point to muddy the waters of the Roswell debate after the release of Case Closed.
I'm surprised it just isn't his treatise on everything that irked him. Like, he should have just written a manifesto.
I know. It almost feels like he should have, taken a Andy Rooney approach. You know what I hate?
I was thinking is Case Closed, the Detective Conan manga.
You know, that's fair.
That would be a wild crossover, Case Closed. And I've seen the loop on the third crossover, so.
Yeah, no, he's investigating the death of Strom Thurmond. Anyway. So let's talk about Bill Moore.
Bill Murray?
Moore.
Oh, okay. That sounds less interesting. Murray.
Yeah, Bill Murray would be more interesting. But Bill Moore, who I mentioned earlier, is the origin of all of this. Except for the initial report from Marcel, of course. The Majestic 12 papers can be traced directly back to Bill Moore. Everyone who got a copy of those papers got them from Bill Moore. They all knew Bill Moore. Several elements of the UFO conspiracy come from him and his, quote, informant, Richard Doty. Now, the problem is that Moore has publicly admitted at MUFON conferences to purposely spreading misinformation in the UFO community to confuse and discredit the whole field on behalf of the government and the military, Doty being his, quote, handler and informant, as it were.
So do you believe the misinformation officer that's also telling misinformation? I mean, it's one of those...
It's weird.
Yeah, it's like, Chicken Little in the sky is falling. It's like,
sure.
Do you believe him, or is...
It gets weirder. While normally this would kill any man's reputation, Doty and Moore have both come back with the "this time I mean it" defense, saying that now they're telling the truth, and UFOs are real, and there is a conspiracy.
Well, and the thing is, like, serial liars slipping into occasional truth to only continue to lie, thanks to creating a shadow of doubt, is nothing new.
Yeah, that's fair, but I just hate that in the world of ufology, all it takes is something like this, and you're back on the talk circuit.
Well, I'm not going to claim that UFO believers are susceptible to shit, but yeah, I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd say that, you know, it just shows that some people believe something so strongly, it doesn't matter who the messenger is, if they deliver a message that fits into their beliefs, they will, you know, believe it.
So, yeah, speaking of belief, we're going to talk about Jesse Marcel Sr.
Mm.
The mime?
What?
No, I'm sorry.
That's Marcel Marceau. Jesus Christ, Mike.
Does Marcellus Wallace look like a bitch to you?
Yes.
So, wow. So, Jesse Marcel is a confusing figure. He had a very distinguished career in the military before and after Roswell. He also began lying and embellishing his role in the recovery efforts when his story was revised in 78. First, he claimed he flew the materials to Wright Field himself. And when confronted with the fact that he didn't and had just
made shit up.
Yeah, just made that up. He corrected and said he accompanied it there instead. All this despite paperwork stating, no, he didn't on either count.
No, well, you didn't.
No, I won't.
Well, I mean, he flew the plane like when you're a little kid and you're in the passenger seat and you're helping drive the car.
So he sat in the seat and went, meow, meow.
You know, I could see him doing that because his son did that. Anyway. The problem with this is that both sides use this as proof. The skeptics point out the differences in his story and truth and call Marcel's reliability into question, as you would. Now, the believers point out the differences and say that the military altered the records as part of the cover-up. And there's not much of a way I can refute that except to ask, well, why didn't they just fucking shoot him?
I heard Mike groan in the background there.
It was more of a snort, but yeah.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, the point is, I still want to know what changed for this man in 78 that made him change his story. I know... Steven, go ahead,
Dave. I was going to say Steven Spielberg making a shitload of money did it.
Okay. That's fair. I never actually considered that, but I feel like maybe this was on purpose to further the cover-up of Project Mogul. I don't know, though.
That's the whole stupid thing about all of this, is that, like, any angle you want to take, you can, because there's so much uncertainty about everything.
And it's just getting more distant.
Mm-hmm.
So
I mean, I don't know. I mean, maybe or just like I would more think it's along the lines of grifting than it is along the lines of being an actual like government disinformation.
So you're more along the lines of I can talk about this and make money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just grift. Which,
yeah. And I think this being so early in the UFO thing, this might be the origins of the fact that no one makes money at this. You don't make money in UFOs. You just lose family.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, there's books, so it's not like they're making a lot of money, but it's better than, you know, working at the Wendy's.
I guess.
I mean, I hate to bring up Steven Spielberg again, but...
Goddamn, son. Why don't you marry him? Jeez.
Yeah, I think it was more of the promise of, like, a big payday.
Yeah.
It's like you see, you know, shit popping off, and you're like, ooh, I can make some money at this.
Yeah. Now, guys, I feel like if there are victims in this story, Jesse Marcel Jr. may be one of them.
The other one is the alien who they shot in the back who was trying to run away.
That poor son of a bitch.
What about the Boy Scouts?
Oh, yeah, them too. That's a good point. That's a good point. But I mean, like, outside of the actual conspiracy.
Like, we'll have to do a Never Forget flyer, and it's going to be, like, 12 Boy Scouts, a little gray alien, and Jesse Marcel Jr.
Yeah, and Stanton Friedman. So, anyway,
with a crowbar.
I read his book, The Roswell Legacy, Jesse Marcel Jr.'s. Mm-hmm. And I can say that this is a man who idolized his father. I mean, he went into the military as a medic and believed in his father for good or ill. Mm. And I'm not going to lie, guys, this book is pretty sad. It's a man trying desperately to clear his father's reputation after skeptics began trashing him. He stands by his memories of the materials he handled as being from off-world. And the problem is, even if you want to believe it, the descriptions sound like foil, balsa wood, and bakelite. Mm. Now, Mike, we talked about this, I think, yesterday. When I was 7 years old, it was like 1983. Mm-hmm. And I think that's when my sister left for college.
Yeah.
And I think that was a year I got chicken pox and was out of school for a while.
Yeah.
My dad could have brought me a real working lightsaber, and I probably wouldn't remember it clearly.
True.
Hell, I don't think I can remember last January clearly, and I'm only 48. Jesse Jr. was much older when he wrote that book, and I really feel bad for this guy.
Yeah, well, here's the other thing is, like, I don't quite get the trying to defend his father's name, because his father was in the military, and if he was, you know, doing something, it was under orders, and I think you would understand that.
Yeah.
Now, whatever, you know, cover up he was doing, it's not like he was doing it for funsies.
Yeah. Well, I feel like Jesse Jr. wasn't purposely misleading people. I feel like when he says top people from the government told me this, yeah, they may have. They may have, so you'd write this book. I feel like he was misled, or maybe misguided is the right word. I don't know.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, you know, if some of this is true and he did actually see, like, you know, parts of a classified project, well, I'm sure military people did come and talk to him and were like, you know, hey, you know.
And these people, this is like in the 90s when these people talked to him, so.
Oh, I'm talking about, like, as a kid.
Oh, no, as a kid, no, nothing happened when he was a kid. Oh,
okay. I misunderstood.
Well, yeah, sorry.
It's a pretty interesting situation. Yeah, like, here's a man who loves his father and wants to support the claims of his father, but there's this other thing to consider. This is also his connection to a big historical thing. I'm not going to say that the guy deep down wants to keep the story going because it gives him a connection to something significant in history and culture, but I can't help but wonder if that may be a factor even subconsciously. I mean, imagine going from, I played with alien technology in my living room, to not having that core belief anymore. There has to be some sort of resistance to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that, because you feel important. I could totally see that.
I mean,
Munchausen by proxy.
I was going to say, yeah. Parents that do Munchausen by proxy aren't doing it on purpose.
They want to feel needed.
Yes.
I mean, his dad is the guy in the photo, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's like a core memory for you, even if you don't quite remember it.
Yeah.
You don't want to be told that what you believe, what you think you experienced never happened.
Yeah.
Because then that removes you from that
thing. I mean, yeah, it's like me and the Volkswagen thing. I'm convinced that happened, but yeah, no, it probably didn't. Where I wrote on the sideboard of a Volkswagen.
Yeah, I mean, it probably happened down the driveway or something.
Maybe.
I don't know. That's what I think.
Yeah,
I
mean, no. Memory is faulty. Yeah, I know that.
That sounds like something dumb kids would do.
Sure. Now we're going to come back around to poor Stanton Friedman.
Suspender enthusiast.
God damn it. Okay, thank you. Now, I also consider Stanton Friedman a bit of a victim here. Mm. Stanton was a believer, And he was so desperate to believe, with such an open mind, that he would believe nearly anything you brought him. And he unfortunately seemed to have abandoned that scientific mindset that he had in his previous life. And I feel like that opened him up to being used.
I can't see how it wouldn't open you up once people realize, you know, hey, this guy has a voice and he'll listen to what we say and repeat it.
Yeah. I feel like he may have been used by the government, definitely by charlatans trying to make a buck, and certainly by the UFO community in general, manipulating him into being the public face for so long.
Yeah.
I mean, this man died alone in an airport on his way to a UFO conference. I feel like he deserved better.
Hope you don't go that way.
No one wants to talk to me.
Well, I mean, you know, you still got time.
What, to die in an airport?
Yes.
Well, I mean, there's this kind of wall of belief that can keep people relatively grounded. Mm-hmm. A point that where you can only go so far before your belief system falters a bit and, like, keeps you in check. Unfortunately for him, Stanton Friedman, suspender enthusiast, managed to scramble over and would wander off into a territory that left him vulnerable.
He just ran into the world of chalk drawings and was never seen again.
Yeah.
God. I feel so bad for the man. Because he seemed like a real nice dude for the most part. But
Yeah. Like, I don't have an issue with him, and I love his taste in fashion.
God, don't say that. I don't want to see you turn into that.
Is me and suspenders. I reckon I'm gonna make you wear overalls. I'll talk about being poisoned by my constituents.
Oh God.
will you hook your thumbs behind him, pull him out, and snap him back?
Oh, he has to. That's like the law.
Oh, you're making a point.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm sweating like a sinner in church.
Now,
ooh, seersucker suit and suspenders.
Mm-hmm. I'm gonna run for local office.
Yeah.
Yep. Y'all vote for Pappy O'Donnell.
Damn, we're in a tight spot.
I love that movie so damn much. Anyway.
What movie is that?
Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, I don't remember that. But yeah, I've seen it.
That ain't my culture and heritage. Anyway. Now, why does this all still matter?
Don't know. You tell me.
Give us a podcast. Yeah, that's the whole reason we're doing this. I feel like the Roswell story is still extremely important to know about and study and research. First, it's an amazing look at how conspiracies worked prior to the internet. I mean, just the telephone game nature of the facts and the lore building up the way it did over decades is extremely interesting to me. We're still seeing it, but on a global scale, and it speeds up to 1,000 times what it was online these days. All it takes is a TikTok video.
Kind of like how, you know, when we were in, like, elementary school, shit would move through the nation. We didn't even know.
Oh, yeah. No. Like, I remember when tight roll jeans hit us, and people would move here from California and go, y'all still do that?
or, you know, just like the... like anything, like patty cake or any of those, you know, the jump rope, sing song stuff or, all that. It's like no one learned that from like TV or anything. It's just cultural osmosis through the country.
Like the chain link S.
I wonder when Mississippi got its first sushi restaurant.
Actually, it was in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it was called Nagoya, and it was great.
Was that the first? I don't think that was the first.
No, you're right. That was Little Tokyo was the first. They have a picture of Alec Baldwin when he was in town filming. Anyway, we're getting distracted here.
In this hole.
Yes. So the other thing about this conspiracy is it has fucking staying power, obviously. Maybe we've got conspiracies like QAnon and stuff like that these days, but will it last as long as Roswell?
Hopefully not.
I don't know. I don't think it will because it's tied to a political movement, and there's always a new conspiracy coming. Now, time is also a factor to this thing. This is really like watching the intro to the Wheel of Time books in real life. Memory becomes legend. Legend fades to myth, and even myth is long forgotten when the age that gave it birth comes again. It's Nerd. Gone. Shut up. It's gone from history and is rapidly becoming legend as it shrinks in society's rearview mirror.
God, you're such a fucking nerd.
I know. Fuck off. Now, yeah, Mr. Fallout nut. Anyway, lastly, the influence it has had on pulp culture cannot be understated. I mean, there are TV shows and movies that are directly based on it or reference it. The X-Files owes its entire existence not only to Roswell, but the culture of conspiracy that sprung up around it. Hell, the three of us wouldn't be sitting here talking every week if Roswell hadn't happened and Jesse Marcel crawled his ass out of the woodwork.
You know, I also want to add that for, like, a lot of this is the, and you can tell I'm saying it's the most important one because I'm saying the.
The, not citing, the.
Yeah, it's the inciting event for the UFO boom of the 20th century. Like,
right.
Sure, there were sightings that predated the possible crash and recovery at Roswell, but they were often just sightings, which I'm putting into air quotes. There's this kind of oh shit element to the event of potentially finding UFO parts or alien bodies that just makes such a lodestar for a cultural movement that we're still processing today.
Right.
And, I can hear that degree working in there.
Right. and the thing is, while like memory of Roswell may fade and details are going to get lost to time or they're going to change, it doesn't mean that it hasn't changed the world significantly. Like, right. More people believe in UFOs than ever. They may not know the finer details of the incident, or even they may not even know a version of the story. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I guarantee a lot of them, when you tell them a version of the story, would buy it because it feels right because of the modern UFO culture that this laid the groundwork for.
I don't know. I think you still could say Roswell to people and they would, you know. Sure. It has something. You might not know, like I said, the story completely, like the one I laid out in the beginning, but they would still know it has something to do with UFOs.
Right.
I have firsthand experience teaching Gen Z.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
And, yeah, like, the amount of stuff that they just, and I'm not going to say they're ignorant of, because it's just not stuff that they need to
culturally
know.
Culturally relevant.
But, yeah, it's just, it's one of those things where it's like, if, unless someone does the TikTok video that covers it in, like, 5 30-second reels, they're right. Not really going to know about it.
Right. Well, we've reached the end, and I'm going to do my conclusion. I need to warn you guys, this is going to get a little cynical. I've got some very cynical views on society. You know that. But in the end, it does still matter. It's still important, and it needs to be preserved and studied. I mean, sure, 98.7% of this story is hokum and comes from miscommunication and grifters, but the process of getting to where we are now and what it's done to society is extremely important. I feel like if we can learn from this, maybe we can start nipping conspiracies in the bud. But then again, maybe not. Maybe this is just a major example of the sheer stupidity of humanity as a species and our need to just not trust. And maybe neither one of those matters. Maybe neither one's true. Maybe it just matters that the truth is out there. We just have to be careful what we believe while we're looking for it. Thoughts, guys?
That was a lot of words to say this shit didn't happen.
I mean,
sorry.
No, it's okay.
No, it's cool. I mean, you mentioned stupidity, but like, all kidding aside, I think there is something kind of beautiful about the curiosity and belief of something more out there that comes with stories of Roswell. And I don't know if it's stupidity. I mean, getting back to the X-Files, would we call Mulder stupid for his philosophy of, like, I want to believe?
Mulder? Yes. Well, other people, maybe not.
Okay, well, okay, Mulder, okay, but, I mean, if you ask me what I think happened, it was probably like a crashed object at Roswell. The crashed object at Roswell was likely some military technology that needed to be covered up as the Cold War was ramping up. Like, that's what my gut instinct is telling me. I don't expect it to be alien tech. Do I want it to be? You bet. I just feel like the world would be a much less depressing case if that's what it was.
Yeah.
And I want to believe in that.
Sure. No, I get that. Yeah. I just feel like there's a certain level of willing ignorance on some of this now. Because I was a believer when I was young, and I still believe in UFOs and aliens and all that fun stuff. But this in particular, it is so easy to pick it apart.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still the legacy of it, the entire thing, the conspiracy is fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I can't think, other than like the Kennedy assassination, this is like one of the big conspiracies, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just felt like we needed to go ahead and get it out there once I realized not everybody knows what the fuck a Roswell is. So any other thoughts besides that was a lot of words?
I didn't mean to belittle your...
No, I understand. It was a funny joke.
I mean... I don't know. I'm tired. I don't know.
Okay.
Well, we just talked to him about Roswell for like nearly 2 hours. Mike needs sleep.
I mean, the problem is you did my job for me, so it's like, what do I do now?
Are you proud of me, Dad?
Yeah, but also it's like, but where's my special weird boy that like
I
believe that aliens were coming for his poo.
You know what happened to that boy?
Hmm.
He read about the stuff and was like, this doesn't seem right.
Well, Mike, give us a Roswell fact.
The aliens that crashed in Roswell were actually here because they wanted to eat at Stucky's.
See, there you go.
And they crashed because they had ptomaine poisoning and couldn't fly the ship.
I'm going to say true.
Yeah, true. Totally true. I buy that. I'd buy that for a dollar. I am going to say this still doesn't explain one very important thing.
Mm.
Why are they coring out cow assholes?
We have to really dig into that one.
I'm not digging into a cow's asshole, but we may dig into the topic.
I mean, you know, what else are you going to do? I mean, you've mastered, you know, crossing the galaxy or universe. You have all the energy of the universe at your disposal. I mean, what the fuck else are you going to do?
Okay.
How else are you going to entertain yourself?
I just had a terrible mental image. Yeah. You know how you go into a place that serves like gyros and they got the giant like cylindrical meat on the rotating thing and they cut it with knives?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That's the cow asshole cored out. That's where that comes Christ. From. They buy it from the aliens.
Well, you know.
Jesus Christ.
That's terrible.
Gotta get it from somewhere.
I guess. So, that's it.
Kevin's done.
I'm done. I'm done with Roswell. I'm happy I did it. I'm glad I'm done.
He's done with this podcast. He'll
never
do another
Can
episode.
You believe the podcast is ending? I can't believe it.
I know.
Can you believe
over.
It took us 3 years to do this?
Honestly,
we got
no,
distracted that's... on the way, and we ended up doing a distraction podcast too.
That's true.
I it is kind of surprising that it took this long, really.
Yeah. So, I do have an interesting announcement now here at the end if you have listened all the way.
Mm.
You have just listened to the last episode of Season 3 of Supernatural Selection.
Oh, no.
What?
Next episode, we are starting Season 4 Ooh. With A Week in Weird. So, that means nothing except to me. It means I can... archive the folders these episodes are in into a season 3 folder and sort it easier.
That's what matters most.
Yes, fuck everything else.
Our
all
production,
my organization.
our production process is what matters most to us, which is why we're very particular and anal retentive about the way things are done.
Yes, the only thing that matters to me is my file structure. Go fuck yourselves. But seriously, I'm just so happy we're going into year four of this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, damn, son.
Yeah, and we're going to have to run for re-election.
Yep, yep. Going to have to do some political assassinations. So, that being said, again, thank you everyone for listening and being with us on this going into 4-year journey. I cannot tell you how much I know I appreciate you guys. David, Mike, I'm sure you do too.
What a long, strange trip it's been.
I swear to God.
See you next year.
See you next year. So don't forget, you can find everything you need to about the show at supernatpod.rocks. That is supernatpod.rocks. You'll find a link to our Discord, our blog, our Patreon, links to our entire back catalog of episodes, including the Distraction Hole, and our merch store.
And keys to our houses.
Yeah, that too. And our passwords. No, you can find David's comics at HP Comics, HPKOMICS.com. You can find my comics currently on the Duck Web Comics. Just look for the Aaron Apprentice or Mailbox Rocket Ship or whatever. I'm working on finding a new home. And you can find Mike right here with us every week.
You can find my comics in an alternate reality because I don't have any.
Actually, I think I've still got your guest comics that were stick figures.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
So, because Mike's a player. Mike don't need to be tied down.
Yep.
So, thank you again for listening. We will see you guys next time for a Week in Weird in Season 4. So, until then, stay safe and stay frosty. Goodbye.
I don't know what to say now.
My froggy thing started sounding like I was either stroking out or having my speech impediment come back, so frosty it is.
It also kind of sounds like maybe you're asking him to be horny.
Yeah, that's what I want.
Fans, be horny for us.
Yeah, be horny.
Problem is, I think all our fans are pretty much dudes, so, you know. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that, but.
We've got a couple female listeners, I'm sure.
Yeah, one of them's my fucking mother, you...
Oh, bastards. Crap, you're right. Okay, we have at least two ladies that listen. Woo! And, I don't know, we're not gonna, like, identify your gender, alright? You're all cool. Bye. Fuck. Shit. We and suck. Bye.
Don't get... only get horny if you want to.
Yeah, Zorak says get horny.